He scores! Gilmore scores! With 1:03 left!
Off the glass, in left corner to Aguilla. Aguilla to the left circle. Passing to Yell, a shot. Save made by Yell. Aguilla, rebound, another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts!
Flames Talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg and Wes Gilbertson.
Hey, happy Friday, and let's get things going on this Friday, November 1st. Welcome to November. Steinberg, Wes Gilbertson, and welcome to the Hot Stove Lounge at the Scotiabank Saddle Dome. It's the Sports Drive on a Friday, brought to you by Calgary Lock and Save. Treat yourself with up to $500 in savings of fire-resistant gun safes. Explore the full line of safes at CalgaryLockAndSafe.com. Welcome to November, Mr. Gilbertson. It's already upon us, just like that.
10 games in already.
10 games in, 1 month in.
Yeah. Did not. 10 snuck up on me.
Yeah. November snuck up on me.
Yeah, tell me about it.
You know what? Feels pretty nice outside for November. If this is what we get for most of the 11th month, I'm okay with it.
You know, last night on my 11th O'Henry bar that I had told myself I was going to give out to trick-or-treaters.
Mini or
yeah,
full?
Oh, minis.
You're not one of the full.
I was like,
you're not a full chocolate bar guy?
What? In this economy?
Yeah, fair point.
I was like, how is it November?
I know.
My goodness.
Well, the Flames need to start November with a win because four in a row, that's a long enough skid. But five turns into kind of one of those, that's a long losing streak. If you lose five in a row, you lose five straight in regulation, that turns into one of those losing skids that can alter the course of a season in some ways. And essentially...
Sure. It would completely erase what you built.
That's just it. Like it essentially wipes out all of what you did through that 5-0-1 start, and now you're at 500 again, and you've got just that 1 point that you gained in Seattle. So, you know, there's a lot of different reasons why the Flames want to get back on the winning side of things tonight. There's a lot of reasons why they want to snap this skid at just the four games. But, you know, they've got New Jersey in here Friday night with Jacob Markstrom between the pipes, and they've got an Oilers team that does not have Connor McDavid, but seems like they have got their season a little bit more back on track. So, I don't know. There's a lot of reason for the Flames to snap this thing on Friday night and not let this thing kind of get away on them, which kind of feels like if you get to five in a row, especially in regulation, it does feel like something that's maybe getting away on you a little bit.
Yeah, and I think, at least from my vantage point, even if the result is not what you're looking for, and yes, you want to snap out of that losing skid, but even if the end result is not what you're going for, it can't be another turd like we saw in back-to-back games on the road. Like, this has to be when your coach calls you out post-game and says, hey, you know, it doesn't look like we want to stick to our game plan now, and that's how we got outscored 10-1 on the road. When your coach calls you out, you know, when your star players or your most important players are using some of the terminology that we're hearing, you know, I think Michael Backlund said they're in a pit of doom right now. Like, when you hear things like that, there has to be a response tonight. It's going to be an amped up building, silver stick ceremony, I'm sure a little bit of hostility towards the old number one netminder, and this just needs to be a much better performance, a much better effort, a much more complete buy-in than we saw in those two games on the road.
What do we think of the pit of doom? Do we like that terminology?
I thought it was good. Yeah, a little different.
Never really quite heard that one before
in that context.
I like it. Yeah. I like it. Give it some more originality. You're hearing things like look in the mirror and you know, got to play for each other, all those types of things. To your point,
yeah,
those are the types of things you hear when a game or two really go awry on you. And that's what happened in Vegas. That's what happened in Utah. 5-0, 5-1. And so they need a win here on Friday night. We'll see if they can snap this losing skid at four. And as such, after another, you know, fairly disappointing effort on the road. Some more changes for the Flames against New Jersey. Let's start with Matt Coronato, who comes back into the lineup. He'll jump back in after missing a few games being in the American League. He'll come back in tonight, and he's going to pop right onto the right side of Michael Backlund in the middle and Blake Coleman on the left. An interesting spot and a fairly... it's an opportunistic spot if you're Matt Coronato to jump in on the Backlund line with Coleman. Saved the game Wednesday in Utah, where that line definitely struggled. For the most part, that's been the most consistent duo, Coleman and Backlund, all season for this Flames team.
Yeah, I like that landing spot for Matt Coronato for a couple of reasons. One, I think it puts him in a position to have success. You know, obviously... That's good company to keep in terms of a couple of veterans who have shown that they can bring out the best in young players. You know, I think it's a good message, and I know we'll hear this clip later, but Ryan Huska talked about today that it can't just be, we're not expecting this guy to come in and just fill the net, and that's all he's going to be measured on. And so I think putting him in that, you know, in that spot sort of reinforces that as well. Like, this is as much about your work ethic and your details as what the offensive numbers wind up looking like. And I'm also curious to see more, and I wasn't sure what to think when I first saw our buddy Derek Wills share the lines from Utah, but I am curious to see more of Huberdeau, Sharangovich, and Kuzmenko. Simply because I thought Jonathan Huberdeau was one of the few guys who really showed up in Utah.
Which I agree with.
Yeah.
That was the first game in a while that Huberdeau kind of popped.
Would have been on the standout list.
Yeah, he fired that shot from long range that really made Ingram work, had to kind of fight it off on the shoulder. Thought he was dynamic with the puck on his stick, was working with the puck away from his stick. I came away, I know that you were maybe a little more favorable on Mantha than I was. The two guys that, you know, we've talked about needing to really break out of it. I know Mantha scored on Wednesday, but it was still kind of meh on him. But I really liked Huberdeau. And when Ryan Huska was in here talking with the broadcast crews afterwards, he said just that too. He said, I didn't think Huberdeau struggled at all on Wednesday. Really felt like he had himself a big game. So no points for Jonathan on Wednesday, but maybe that can help get him back a little bit closer to where he was earlier in the season.
Yeah, and I just like Coronato in that third line spot because I'd like to see a better game out of that Huberdeau, Sharangovich, Kuzmenko trio, or at least a better game from the three individual parts so I can judge what it might look like as a line. And so that's on Sharangovich now and Kuzmenko. I thought we saw a strong Huberdeau. The recipe sort of makes me cringe. Like, I wonder how it would work, whether there's going to be, you know, the right guy up the middle, whether there's the right attention to defensive detail, all that, but I'm curious to see.
This was head coach Ryan Huska on Friday morning, asked about Matt Coronato, who comes back into the lineup tonight. He played a couple of games down in the American League with the Wranglers, had a couple of goals, and now is back on an NHL roster and being put into a top nine role with the team as well. This was head coach Ryan Huska on Friday morning.
I think that's the one thing you always feel like whenever someone's brought up that's a first-round pick, everybody puts the pressure of the world on his shoulders. It's not that at all. He's just got to come up and be himself, and we feel like that's good enough.
And that's kind of the important message for a guy like Matt, hey? And honestly, in the five games he's played with the team this year, I think he's done that more often than not. I haven't felt like it's been a case of him trying to do too much. I haven't felt like it's been a case of him getting away from details or anything like that. Generally, I've quite liked Coronato. It's why I said 1 week ago when he got sent down to the Wranglers, I don't feel like this was an on-merit type thing. I think this was a roster situation. I know that was the message to Matt as he went down from management and the coaching staff was, hey, this is not a performance thing. We are in a spot where we've got guys coming back. You don't have to clear waivers. This is going to be temporary. I know you're upset about it. Go down and show us that you got to come back up. And 6 days later, he gets the recall. 7 days later, he's playing on a line with Michael Backlund and Blake Coleman. So hopefully we just continue to see what we had seen before from number 27.
You know, buddy, there's lots of times when the head coach in his press conference or his media scrum is sort of sending a message to, you know, just to the media in terms of maybe the way questions worded. There's lots of times they're sort of sending a message to the fan base. Ryan Husk is a guy who's very aware of sort of some of the storylines. And so, you know, there can be different, I guess, circumstances. And that one to me today, the more I think about it, almost felt like a little bit of a message to Matt Coronato. And you're right, like the detail part hasn't been lacking in his five NHL games this year. And yet, I wonder if the head coach wants to make sure that he's not thinking, okay, the only way for me to stay in the NHL is to make sure I score goals. And to perhaps get away from some of the other staples of his game because of that. Because he's a guy who, you know, I can imagine it messes with your mind a little bit when the coach and the GM say, hey, we like the way you're playing, but you're going back to the Wranglers. Hey, you're really on the right track, but you're going back to the Wranglers. And please don't take that as me criticizing the decision, because I was perfectly fine with it. But I think they want to make sure that Matt Coronato doesn't get in his mind, the only way for me to stay up is now to go score more goals. Would that help? Absolutely. But that, to me, from Ryan Huska today, felt like a little bit of a stay the course message to Coronato.
Yeah, and honestly, and I think there's a lot of wisdom to that, because I know that we haven't seen Coronado's numbers really pop. 2 goals in 5 games. Not bad, but not like jumping off the page or anything like that. But you go take a look at some of his metrics. Your favorite stat, individual expected goals.
I love expected goals.
I actually quite do. I think it's quite a telling stat, and I love how much you hate it. So I really want to make sure that I bring
more
that
of a
up.
Regular goals guy, but I that's just, hey, it's just me.
You know what? You know what? You're speaking to a large percentage of people as well. But at 5-on-5, Coronato, number 2 on the team in expected goals. He is number 2 on the team in terms of individual scoring chances per 60 minutes, and number 2 on the team in terms of individual high danger chances per 60 minutes, courtesy of Natural Stat Trick. And you know, that it just, he doesn't play as much at 5-on-5 as Kadri does, who leads in a lot of those categories this year. Doesn't play as much at 5-on-5 as Michael Backlund does, so on and so forth. But still, has, I think, in his 5-on-5 minutes, because we haven't seen him play a lot at on the power play and a lot on special teams, but at 5-on-5, I think that he's been, you know, pretty, I would suggest he's been pretty effective when he's been out there. So the more that he can just continue to do that stuff, the better, and then eventually I think the numbers will follow. And so if he is thinking about, oh, I got to score, hopefully the message is, hey, what you're doing is the way that those numbers are going to start catching up to you.
Yeah, I think that makes perfect sense. I mean, he's a guy who has proven offensively prolific at other levels, right? He was a big-time scorer in the USHL. He was always among the team scoring leaders in his 2 seasons at Harvard. I believe he's over a point-per-game guy in the AHL, was an all-star at that level last year. And so there's no reason to doubt the offensive skill set, but the foundation of his game is going to be on the work and on the details, because that's how he's going to establish himself in the NHL.
Justin Kirkland will not play on Friday night, and that is not a performance thing, Wes. That I think more than anything else, that is a CBA hockey nomenclature thing. So I think the biggest reason why we're going to see Kirkland sit out tonight is because if he plays a 10th game, then he requires waivers again. So the way it works is, when you've cleared waivers, like Kirkland did at the beginning of the season when he was assigned to the American League, when you get recalled to the NHL, when you get recalled, you have a period of 30 days on the NHL roster or 10 games on the NHL roster, whatever comes first, where you now have a waiver exemption where you can pass back and forth between the NHL and AHL without having to clear waivers. And if he plays against New Jersey, that would be his 10th game, which would mean his waiver eligibility kicks back in. Now, I know that there would be some who say, well, why overthink this? And I do understand that to an extent, but I think more than anything else, this is a situation where I think the Flames Craig Conroy and company want to buy themselves a little bit of time to make a decision and to make the right decision, you know? Like, buy themselves some time. Do they – because right now they've got 8D, they've got 13 forwards, and they've got the two goalies. And I think they would like to just give themselves a little bit more time potentially to – figure out what they want to do. Do they want to keep Rooney and Kirkland up? Do they want to keep the eight defensemen and keep Hanley up with the team? Do they want to bring Klapka back up and have 14 forwards set? So I think there's just a little bit of time buying that goes on, and you can put Rooney in and be fine with him as your number four center for a game while they make a little bit they make their decision on how they want that to go. I think that's more what this is aimed at, because, you know, Kirkland's been pretty solid for them at 5-on-5.
Sure.
Again, on merit, I don't know if this is the reason why he's coming out of the lineup.
You mentioned that there's going to be people who say they're overthinking this, and I certainly, in past moves to keep a guy waiver exempt, have thought the same thing. You're overthinking this. You're putting too much stock into this. But in this case, Pat, I think it's prudent because, well, for a couple of reasons. I do think that it's ultimately going to come down to Justin Kirkland or Kevin Rooney. Like, I don't think those pieces are different enough that you necessarily need both of them on your roster. And so I do think this is an opportunity for Kevin Rooney, who's been outplayed by Kirkland in the last while from my vantage point, and based on the roster decisions, I think in the opinion of the coaching staff as well. So for starters, I think this is a challenge to him to say, hey, you've kind of lost your grip on that fourth line center job, but here's a chance to go win it back. And let's remember, this is a team that has got it handed to them in the last two games. It's not like you can't make some roster moves or some lineup tweaks, and so often that starts with your depth pieces, whether that happens to be your third pairing or your fourth line. And so I don't mind that part of it. I also think, you've got a fully healthy team right now. If keeping Justin Kirkland waiver exempt means that you have the option to send him down for, a couple of games or two or three weeks or whatever that may be, and buy yourself a little bit more time, I don't really have a problem with that. You know, if that's the way you go, I think that can make some sense. But the challenge first goes to Kevin Rooney to say, hey, if you want to be the guy who plays on the fourth line, if you want that job, we got to see it in these next couple games.
And finally, because we're going to talk about Jacob Markstrom a little bit more this hour with Derek on the Daily Flames Roundtable. But Kevin Ball, so Jacob Markstrom will play his former team as he gets the start in net for New Jersey. And Kevin Ball will play his former team as he will take on the Devils for the first time since that trade in June as well. What have our impressions been of Ball? He's been one of the only two guys to stay on the same pairing all year long. The other one, of course, being his partner Rasmus Anderson. Those two have been the only ones who have stayed on the same pairing. Every other pairing has changed. We've seen Weegar play with three different guys. We've seen that third pairing go through a number of different permutations. Ball Anderson, since game one, is the only one that stayed as a constant pairing.
Yeah, I know if you go back to June when that trade dropped, there were, a lot of people looking at it and saying, hang on, who's this defenseman they got? This is the player they got from the New Jersey Devils for a starting netminder, for a guy who's been a Vezina Trophy finalist. And I think what we've seen in these past 10 games is that, well, the numbers are never going to jump off the page. This is a really solid player they brought in from the Devils. This is a guy, what I appreciate the most, I think, about Kevin Ball is he really plays within himself. Like, he doesn't try to be more than what he is, and what he is a really solid stay-at-home defenseman. And listen, any guy who fits that mold is going to tell you they'd like to add a little more offense, whether that's a conversation you have with Kevin Ball or Braden Pahal or Ilya Solovyov in the minors. Like, these are all guys who are trying to show they can be more than just a shutdown defenseman. But so far, I think that has been a really nice fit alongside Rasmus Anderson.
Yep.
Kevin Ball has the tied for the best plus minus on the team. A misleading stat sometimes. I know he is tied with Anthony Mantha and Justin Kirkland, so you can look at it and say, well, how much am I really learning from that stat? But he's been...
Guy slags off expected goals and then rolls out plus minus over here, hey?
Listen, let's go back to expected goals for a second. The only time you're referencing expected goals are when there's not actual goals. And so whenever I see expected goals as the... I know there was a tweet that became popular in some circles.
Which?
About Matt Coronato and his expected goals. Well, look, he's got all these expected goals. And this isn't about Matt Coronato. This is just purely about expected goals. If you're referencing expected goals, there's not a lot of actual goals happening.
Not always,
I digress.
Not always the case, but I understand what you're saying.
Give me an example. Like, you'd never say, oh, my God, Nico Hischier's in here tonight, and look at all the expected goals he has. No, you don't say that because he has, hang on, wait for it, goals.
Yeah, he's got a lot of goals.
Yeah.
Okay, but you know when else you can use expected goals? When a guy's got a lot of goals and you're like, well, maybe the shooting percentage is helping him a little bit. You know, a guy shooting at 42% and he's got 9 goals, but the expected goals are 3. You're like, okay, maybe there's a little bit more of an indication of how a guy's actually playing, and maybe the puck's just going in for him. So, you know, I think there are a lot of applications that some people overlook when talking about some of these very important and enlightening numbers that are available to us.
Pat, as I go searching for the tracks we were on, tell me how you felt about Kevin Ball.
I actually quite like him. I think he's been a very he's not alone in this. I think his game fell off in Vegas and Utah, and I thought he struggled a little bit in that series. But generally, I've quite liked that pairing. And Ryan Huska has used them as the top pairing, or at least used them in the most difficult circumstances. 83 defensive zone faceoffs against 40 offensive zone faceoffs, so all more than 2-1 in terms of the faceoff allocation. They have done a pretty decent job of mitigating high danger chances. They've done a pretty decent job of not being out there for a lot of goals. In fact, their goals for, goals against, their actual goals, their A goals for 10-5 when they've been out there at 5-on-5. So I've quite liked Ball. He has just been who I think he knows who he is, and I think he's been that. And he's been a really nice foil, a really nice fit for Rasmus Anderson. And this was Ryan Huska talking about it a little earlier on Friday, was asked about that pairing and was asked about, you know, why they've been the one that has stuck together all season long.
It's funny, we didn't know what was going to happen with those two in exhibition because Baller had a nagging little thing that we wanted to clear up. So we never knew if they would have that chemistry, but they do. And I think a little of it is because you've got one guy that feels like he can get himself a little bit more involved offensively, and the other guy has a pretty good understanding of how he has to play as a defenseman, and that doesn't mean he's going to be leading the rush all the time. So he's typically, if you want to call him a safety blanket for Ras, I'm not sure, but they seem to feed off each other with the different styles that the two play.
Can I ask you a little bit more on Ball, just as far as 10 sure. games in and what your impressions of him have been?
Yeah, very positive. I mean, he's a big body, which is something that we were looking for on the back end. So when he became available in the trade, we were pretty excited about having him. He's a younger guy that fits in kind of with our age category. And in talking to former coaches, they all liked what the direction or the path that he was headed. So everybody felt that he had upside there. For me, I think because he's got a little more opportunity maybe to play bigger minutes and against better people, he's feeling really good about himself now too. So the size that he's playing with, I think he's anticipating the play really well. So he's able to get his stick in the mix a lot. And then he's been physical, a little bit more physical than I was expecting him to be for us.
I quite like the way that he has worked well with Rasmus Anderson. I don't think there's any doubt that he's been a big part of why Rasmus Anderson has had the success he's had. Like, and I would say it's probably like 90% Rasmus and 10% his partner. But, you know, Rasmus is confidence to join the rush. When you asked him following the Winnipeg loss, you know, where the offense is coming from, the first thing he says, I'm just trying to join the rush more. And we've never seen him. It is noticeable how much he is up there. There are times when you're like, who is that? That's number four behind the net. And the way that he is leading rushes, the way that he is confidently using the green light and then slamming on the gas, like I think a lot of that is on him and his confidence and just him taking on an even larger role. But I think the confidence he has in his partner, I don't think there's any coincidence in that, that they've been a really good fit so far and the only pairing that is about to go 11 for 11.
Yeah, the chemistry has been really, really encouraging, I guess would be a good word for it. The two complement each other very well. In fact, I look at Mackenzie Weegar as a guy who could use a Kevin Ball right now, a guy who could free him up to take a few more offensive chances, who he could develop a little bit more chemistry with, who could allow him to bump over to the right side. You know, that they only have one Kevin Ball, and I'm not suggesting they take him off the pairing with Rasmus Anderson, but one of the more complimentary things I could say about the impact he's made so far with this Flames team is they could kind of use another guy like him.
Yeah, he's been a nice fit for him so far, and he and Rasmus Anderson will play with one another once again on Friday night when they host the New Jersey Devils. We're underway this hour on Flames Talk. Wes Gilbertson, Pat Steinberg from the Hot Stove Lounge here at the Scotiabank Saddle Dome, and everything being produced back downtown in our Groundworks downtown studio. Groundworks, your local experts for foundation and crawl space repair.
You're locked on Flames Talk, only on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
And now a Friday edition of the Daily Flames Roundtable brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The simpler way to sell your vehicle is with their expertise. Visit Mercedes-Benz Country Hills just minutes from the airport. We are all in the same place here at the Hot Stove Lounge at the Scotiabank Saddle Dome on this Friday. Pat Steinberg, Wes Gilbertson, and now Derek Wills, the voice of the Flames, joins us to complete our Daily Flames Roundtable. It's a Friday showdown between the Flames and Devils here at the Dome, and for the first time since June's trade, Jacob Markstrom at the Dome, and he will be in net as the Devils take on the Flames on a Friday night. Gents, as Jacob returns to the Dome for the first time, how do we look back on his four seasons with the Flames as a free agent signing?
He was a good signing. There's no doubt about it. I mean, you sign him as an unrestricted free agent, and you end up trading him for a guy who's playing in your first pairing in Kevin Ball, and a first-round pick. So that's a pretty good return on investment, if you ask me. As far as his four seasons as a member of the Flames, he was a very good goaltender. I think it's safe to say he was a legitimate number one goaltender for 4 years, and at times an elite goaltender. Obviously, the best season he had was back in 2021-2022, at least during the regular season in the first round of the Stanley Cup playoffs, led the league in shutouts with 9, was a finalist for the Vezina Trophy, and was really good in that first round series against the Stars. And I know Jake Oettinger got the headlines in that series, as he should have, but Jacob Markstrom was really good too. So that was his best season as a member of the Flames, but excellent player for this team. Thought he was going to be really tough for the Flames to replace in the first 8 games of the season. That Dan Vladar and Dustin Wolf did a great job not hanging what happened in the last couple of games on the goaltenders, but a tough guy to replace, but so far so good, I would say, for the tandem that's trying to do it.
Yeah, certainly a good signing. 4 years, or for the four seasons he played for this team, certainly plenty of ups and downs.
And it was about 4 years ago that he signed.
Yeah,
remember, it was
October 2020. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think, well, two things. A, he provided some stability at a position that the Calgary Flames had not had much stability for a long time. You know, in my career on the Flames beat, I couldn't tell you how many summer goaltending stories I've written. Oh, who can they get to be their number one goalie? Okay, who can they get now to be their number one goalie? Oh, who are the solutions out there for a number one netminder? Like, this was a merry-go-round that we did every summer in Calgary until Jacob Markstrom arrived, and then for four seasons, there really was no question about who the opening night starter would be, who the workhorse would be, who would play 80% of the games. I also think, I suppose, a kind of underrated part of Jacob Markstrom's tenure here in Calgary, and I know it didn't end very well, but I think it allowed some important development time for Dustin Wolf, but also for Dan Vladar. I think part of the reason you've seen them get off to a strong start so far this season, and obviously the shine has come off the numbers a little bit with both of them getting torched for five in their last start, but I think part of the success they've had so far this season is the fact that they weren't thrown into the deep end really young. Dustin Wolf wasn't asked after his first AHL Goalie of the Year award to be a regular NHLer. Dan Vladar wasn't asked to go from a guy who'd only played a handful of NHL games to shouldering a much heavier workload. And while I know that wasn't the sort of intention with Jacob Markstrom, the intention was to chase championships with a guy that they believed was one of the elite netminders in the NHL. And certainly that one season was. You know, I think maybe an underrated part of what Jacob Markstrom's stint at the Saddle Dome allowed was what we're watching now, because goaltending, and again, I know the last two haven't been great, but goaltending really has been one of the strong suits for this team this season, and that's not really what we were anticipating.
Yeah. I mean, first of all, I remember when the – I think it was – pre-COVID, when some, if it wasn't pre-COVID, it was during early in COVID, but I think it was like pre-COVID when some of these, some of the rumors about the Flames and their interest in Jacob started coming to the forefront. And at that time, it made sense. And then the Flames capitalized on a Vancouver team that looked at Thatcher Demko and looked at an upcoming expansion draft and said, we can't keep two goalies because one of them, if we're going to do that, and Jacob at the time wanted a no-move clause to stay in Vancouver, that means they would have had to protect two goalies, which means they would have been losing somebody really good to the Seattle Kraken in the expansion draft. They said, we can't give you the no-move clause. We can get to here on dollars, but we can't give you the no-move clause. The Flames were willing to do that. They got to that 6x6. I think Edmonton was offering another year and maybe a little bit more when it was all said and done, but he decides to sign with the Flames, and I would say generally the 4 years were quite positive, and he gave the Flames something that they hadn't had, as you mentioned, Wes, for the longest time, and that was somebody that you just knew was going to be the number one. And it wasn't always great. I mean, obviously, we all remember the year after the Battle of Alberta, and we remember how difficult that year was for Jacob and how the numbers really took a hit. But I would say that, by and large, he gave them number one quality goaltending. By and large, he gave them what they were looking for when they signed him. Unfortunately, they didn't chase championships the way that they would have liked with Jacob here. They only made the playoffs with Jacob the one time, but I still think it's a successful signing. And then to bring it back to your point, Wilsey, not only do I think it was a successful signing for what he did in his four seasons here, but then for them to be able to flip him for a first-round pick and a D-man who's 24 years old and figures to be a part of this for the next little bit, that also, I think, turns it into a pretty successful all-round transaction.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, I've been calling Flames games for 11 years. You guys have been covering the team even longer than that. I would say, and feel free to disagree, I would say he's the best goaltender the Flames have had since Mika Kiprusoff.
Yep, absolutely.
Oh, there's no disagreement.
Yep.
Absolutely none. I mean, they went through Brian Elliott and Mike Smith and some other sort of Band-Aid solutions in the between time, obviously Kari Ramo and Jonas Hiller, and
I'm doing the list.
Joey
right now,
McDonald, yeah, Danny Taylor. There was the Danny Taylor experience.
Yoni Ortio,
yep. Chad Johnson,
yep. There was a lot of names that came.
Big Snag Zag.
Yeah, he even got into a game. That's right, Artem Zagadulin. Are you going through all the goalies there?
I am going through all of the goalies since I started calling games for this team back in 2014, 2015. So, excluding the guys who are currently playing for the Flames, we've got Hiller, Ramo, Ortio, Backstrom, Elliott,
Backstrom,
Johnson, Gillies, Smith, Riddick, Lack, Talbot,
Lack,
and Domingue. That's a lot of goaltenders.
That's
Holy
right.
Holy smokes. Yeah.
Chef Louis, John Gillies. I forgot about Nick Backstrom. him coming over and that weird trade on deadline day. That was a very strange one.
Did you have Danny Taylor, or was that before
your time? That was before his time.
I called his games in the American League, I remember.
And I think he only started like three games in the NHL with the team.
That
Brent Cron played that one period.
Not with the Flames, though. He played that with Dallas
and got
completely lit up. I don't know if you knew that. Yeah. I think he allowed three goals and like six shots or something. Like 3-on-9,
yeah,
I don't
know
what it was. That is a lot of goalies.
Yeah.
Joey McDonald was just before your time. Leland Irving was in that mix as well. Yeah,
it's been a struggle.
It's been a tough position for the Flames, that's for sure.
And what they haven't done, including Jacob Markstrom and including Mika Kiprusoff, and they hope Dustin Wolf is the change in this, is they haven't been able to grow a goalie. I mean, they haven't drafted and developed a starting goaltender since Trevor Kidd, I want to say.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was a long time ago.
And maybe they've got their guy now. We hope that they've got their guy now in Dustin Wolf, who they have drafted and developed and has started half of the game so far. It's a good way to move into our second part of the roundtable. Derek, Wes, and Pat on this Friday. Guys, and Wilsey, as you said, like Jacob was this team's best goalie since Mika Kiprusoff and their first unchallenged number one really since Mika, or maybe that year where Mike Smith was clearly the one before he got hurt and Riddick had to come in. But when you take a look at this goaltending situation now, if you even want to put Cooley into the mix with Wolf and Vladar, like, do the Flames need to find that next guy? Not long term, but like this season. Do the Flames need to have a guy at some point this year who takes the number one job? How urgent do they need that?
I don't know yet, because I don't know what they're planning to do with Dan Vladar. So he is a pending unrestricted free agent. He's in the second year of a two-year, $4.4 million contract. And by the way, great work at least 10 games out of the season by Craig Conroy, who I think is getting good goaltending for just over $3 million for his tandem, which is ridiculous. Dustin Wolf signs for $75,000 above league minimum. He's making $850,000. Dan Vladar, $2.2 million. So great value between the pipes for the Flames in the first 10 games of the season. I think ultimately the Flames would love for Dustin Wolf to prove that he is going to be their number one guy long term. But I don't think that he's had an opportunity to do that. He's starting to get that opportunity, and I think he's looked fantastic in at least four of the five games he's played in this season. And again, I wouldn't hang what happened in Utah on Wednesday night on him. And I wouldn't hang what happened in Vegas on Monday night on Vladar. I was more on the guys in front of them, at least in my opinion. So do they have to find a guy? Maybe, maybe not. I mean, you've got Devin Cooley, who you could potentially keep around, whether he's as a number two or a number three in the organization. And then I think you've got a battle that will play out during the season between Dan Vladar and Dustin Wolf. If Vladar is clearly the better of the two guys, then I think you try to keep him. If he's not, and Wolf appears to be the better of the two, and you believe he's your goaltender of the future, then I think you can go a couple of different ways. You can try to bring Vladar back on a team-friendly contract, or maybe bring in a veteran to play behind Wolf and to mentor him if you think that Dustin is ready to go from a guy who plays around half the games this season to maybe playing 45 or 50 or 55 games next season. So I don't know if they have to, but I think it's something that's just going to kind of play out as the season goes along here.
Yeah, the way I see it, guys, is not that they necessarily need to identify a number one netminder by the end of the season. And certainly I don't think they need to have a guy who gets 55 or 60 starts this season. But I think, and hopefully this will make more sense than expected goals for,
or against.
I think they just need to make sure, or they need to give themselves an opportunity to find out if they still think the guys that they have number one potential. And by that, I just mean you need to see enough of the two guys to still believe that they're trending towards being a number one goalie. You need to have an answer. You can't go into this summer thinking, geez, I don't know what we should do. We don't know what we should do with Dan Vladar because we didn't really get an opportunity to see if he could take the ball and run with it for a stretch. We still don't necessarily know what we have in Dustin Wolf. I don't think you need to anoint a number one by the end of this season, but I do think you need to have pockets where you can kind of get some answers about whether these two guys you still believe are trending that way. So far, so good, obviously, but I think it's important to assess that sometime between now and April.
Yeah, I think the guy, and maybe this is unfair because, as you mentioned, Dan is a pending unrestricted free agent, but I do think it's important, especially on the Wolf front, to see him get a little bit of a run to see if he can do it over the course. And maybe you should do it at some point with both guys. You know, right now it makes sense that they've gone back and forth and they probably should continue to go back and forth for a little bit here. But at some point, personally, because Wolf figures to be the guy that they want to be the number one for the future, I think you'd like to see him go for a 10-game stretch where maybe he starts 7 or 8 of those 10 games. And you know what? It probably is just as valuable to see that with Vladar the more I think about it, because you got to make a decision. Are you gonna look to move him before the trade deadline, or are you going to look at him as a guy who is a part of this long term? So it probably, you know, does make sense to give each guy that run, or at the very least go for a stretch of time and see what you've got when they do have a little bit more of an extended workload. You know, right now probably isn't the time because you're still getting both guys their feet back wet. For Vladar, he's still coming back from surgery, and for Wolf, he's still learning the everyday grind of the NHL. And for both guys, they've never played the workload that they're taking on right now at this level, so some more time acclimating probably makes sense. But at some point, I think at the very least, simulating that for each guy probably makes sense.
And guys, I'm not sure the Flames are going to have an answer to this question by the end of the season, as strange as that might sound. So who's the guy who we most often hear Dustin Wolf compared to? UC Saros, right?
Yeah.
So if you use UC Saros as an example, he played in one NHL game in his first season in North America, and then 21 in his second, and then 26 in his third, and then he became a full-time NHLer, but was still playing behind potentially a future Hall of Famer in Pekka Rinne. So then he played in 31 games, 40 games, 36 games, and then it's only the last four seasons, if you include this one, where he has taken over that number one role, playing in 67, 64, and 64 games respectively. So I don't think that this is going to be a scenario where you snap your fingers and Dustin Wolf suddenly becomes UC Saros. I think it's going to be a process, and I wouldn't be surprised to see the Flames bring back Dan Vladar at the end of this season, because I think they could be a good tandem moving forward, but I do think that you would like to see somebody start to emerge as at least the 1A between now and the end of the season. I think it would give you a better idea of how to handle the goaltenders during the offseason.
Yeah, as long as you're not bringing in a Pekka Rinne, and obviously that's not the player it would be, but I'd be curious to have someone from the Predators organization sit down and ask them, okay, you know, this sort of slow build with Saros, 21, 26, 31, 40, would you have done more than that if you didn't have
Pekka Rinne?
Yeah. And so that's where I wonder, the Flames, you know, Jordan Sigalette has been looking at UC Saros and the way he was broken into the NHL for years. They've talked to Dustin Wolf about that comparable. We want to sort of build you up the same way. I just wonder how many years into his career that comparison doesn't maybe hold as much weight because he doesn't have the superstar in front of him.
Yeah,
right.
And then the only other thing that I'd add to this whole conversation is go look at Cooley's numbers in the American League. They definitely see him as part of this long-term equation as well, which then adds another wrinkle when it comes to what they may or may not do with a guy like Vladar, too.
And you don't see a lot of 23-year-olds who are star goaltenders in this league.
No.
Because generally speaking, goaltenders take longer to develop than defensemen, and defensemen take longer to develop than forwards. That's usually how it works. Dustin Wolf is 23 years old and presumably in his first season as a full-time NHLer. So will we know at the end of this season if he is going to be the long-term solution for the Flames? I think we'll have a better idea. But the other factor, fellas, you have to consider the team playing in front of him, right? I mean, where are the Flames going to be at after game number 82? You know, they're in a pretty good spot right now, despite a four-game losing streak, still above 500 and still at a playoff spot, or at least tied for third in the Pacific Division. But where are they going to be as this season progresses? Are they still going to be competitive? Are they still going to be playing at a pretty high level in front of their goaltenders? If not, then I do wonder what that does as far as the development process for both Dan Vladar, who's 27, and Dustin Wolf, who's 23, goes.
Yeah.
Sixth youngest goalie in the league so far this season.
Yep.
And that includes a couple of guys who've just been up for a cup of coffee. Mm-hmm. So
he is Derek Wills. He's Wes Gilbertson. My name is Pat Steinberg. That'll start to wrap us up this hour. First off, that's your Daily Flames Roundtable brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The simpler way to sell your vehicle is with their expertise. Visit Mercedes-Benz Country Hills just minutes from the airport. Lots to dive into on this Friday game against New Jersey, and lots kicking around this Flames group looking to snap a losing skid at 4. Thanks to Cam and Shan, our producers this hour, and this hour has been the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Treat yourself with up to $500 in savings of fire-resistant gun safes. Explore the full line of safes at CalgaryLockAndSafe.com.